KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm sitting across from a young man who's happened to star in three films I think have a unique perspective in our culture. They're three films about the collateral damage of young African-American men growing up without fathers. Those films would be Fruitvale Station, Creed, and Black Panther. His newest film is Creed 2. It's Michael B. Jordan. First of all, thank you so much for doing this.
Man, I appreciate you, man. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. But, you know, I was talking to Ryan about this, and this is unique in the film, the history of film, that there are three films about what happens to young black men without fathers. And you got to star in all three of them.
Yeah, man. It's, you know, I think when we first started out doing Fruitvale Station, I mean, I didn't have it in my mind that that's what, you know, our next three projects, what they would be and what they would be about, you know, kind of breaking into that perspective and giving, showing that example of what that's like. But Fruitvale Station with Oscar, you know, Oscar Grant showing the, you know, police brutality at a level, you know, of police shootings, really set the tone moving forward for what the public, the people were going to see. And that's a lot of like reality, you know what I'm saying, of these young brothers getting shot. So kind of be the face of that and be able to kind of express that frustration, you know what I'm saying, and that kind of you know, like, and give them some humanity, you know what I'm saying, give Oscar some humanity back. It meant a lot.
But, you know, playing those three guys, playing Oscar, then playing Adonis, and then playing Eric, I mean, this is really something that, as people of color, we see all the time, but we don't see this in movies. What happens to young men when they have to deal with having their fathers taken away from them at an early age?
And in dealing with the identity issues, you know what I'm saying, of where their examples come from, you know, how to you know, to be a well-rounded, you know, fully fleshed out, you know, thinking black man with the emotional and of tools to handle the world that surrounds him, the society that he's in. I think Adonis, you know, living in his father's shadow that he never really got a chance to meet, is a unique perspective of a lot of the fears and insecurities that Adonis has, you know, throughout the course of these films, and of who he is, what he's fighting for, you know, the abandonment issues, you know, people walking out on him, leaving him. And that's what he overcomes, you know, once he goes into fatherhood and becomes a dad, and understanding that, you know, it's not about him. It's about, you know, it's about this life, you know, his responsibility and his family. And then, you know, being able to deal with, you know, with Killmonger, with Eric, you know, is more diving into that, you know, the African diaspora, you know what I'm saying, and what it feels like to be a part of that lost tribe, you know, that doesn't have any identity, that doesn't have any, that's got everything kind of ripped away from him. And wanted to start the conversation of we're all one people, you know, we're together, and have that conversation back and forth. So yeah, it was just, I've been extremely blessed to be able to work with Ryan on these projects and be able to tell these stories elegantly, but, you know, unapologetically, you know, of how we feel within the frame of the film, man, and really get these messages across.
One of the things I'm really interested in what you do as an actor is the way you find a way to play pride for these characters. I mean, they're proud in very different ways. We were just talking about Chronicle before we got started here. We could look at Fahrenheit 451 on that example, too. You find a way to play these guys' pride in very different ways, but you played so many really proud characters. And I wonder if that's something that you find to use as kind of your building block. You know, you make that part of the DNA from the outset, or does that just come in as you're working with these characters?
Yeah, I never looked at it as like proud, you know.
But you know, I mean, for Eric, I mean, he's pride first and foremost, like,
yeah,
to a dangerous degree.
Yeah, I think that's just like a byproduct of who he is. Like he feels like he's owed something, you know. So, and he feels like he's right, you know. So somebody who has the perspective of, I know I'm right, you know, because I know more than you. I've lived it, and I've done. I've studied and waited. Look, you haven't been as patient as I am. You know, I've seen everything, because Eric is very, very, he's very well thought out. He doesn't make any irrational moves for the most part. He's very well thought out. So just and Adonis and Oscar and Montag.
Yeah.
Sorry, Montag from Fahrenheit 451. These are all characters that eventually have some type of resolve and grit, you know what I'm saying? That's proud of where they come from, and they have to stand up and do the right thing. So that's kind of where that, I guess, that pride
but
comes from.
But the pride for Adonis, for example, is almost about him trusting his instincts more than anybody else. His instincts are always right until he has to realize that they're not. And for Killmonger, it's that thing you were saying where everything is deliberate, everything has been thought out. So he's got to this point where he's just not going to hide it anymore. And he's even proud of the wounds. I mean, every blow that he's taken, he's proud of. And the difference for Adonis is that, you know, he's not proud of having taken these blows because that almost suggests weakness or not being able to attack the way he wanted to. But you found so many interesting physical ways to play his pride. I mean, just Killmonger just steps into a room and announces what he is at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about that for Montag, too, because he's sort of proud of what being defined as this thing, but the more he finds out about, the less proud he is.
Exactly. It's like that proudness kind of, you know, it's a catch-22 for him because he grew up in the system. That's kind of like he totally, you know, believes it wholeheartedly. Like, this is his world. This is his life. Like, he's living his truth. So when he starts to question that truth and that world around him, he, you know, that same pride and joy of doing his job well starts to turn, and you know, you question the person right in the mirror, like who am I? What everything that I believe that I knew, you know, that color was that color. I knew I just as much as the air that I'm breathing is real, it's not real anymore. How do you kind of, what does that do to your brain? You know what I'm saying? What does that do to you as a person? You know what I'm saying? How do you process those feelings?
Sure. It's the truth. I guess we just referenced a book title when he's talking about Fahrenheit 451 is Michael B. Jordan. His newest film is Creed 2. But I was thinking in terms of that pride, you know, it's just that for a lot of the guys you play, they come to this moment, they realize that pride is not the be-all, end-all, that they have to make that next step past that and start to educate themselves.
Well, like in the Creed 2, it's like, I guess it's always about what a fighter learns outside of the ring that he can take into the ring. You know, what are the lessons? What's the metaphor for boxing in life, you know? I think towards the end of this film, well, Adonis's arc pretty much, he starts out very immature. You know, in this film, you know, making a lot of selfish decisions, a lot of I, you know, something that, you know, Tessa and I and Stephen Caple really talked about on this project was the transition of saying I and we, you know, on collective, a team thing. It's not just, you know, have to do everything on your own, you know, just because you're in this ring, you know, fighting this man one on one. It's not just you. You got other people who are affected by decisions or things that happen inside.
But there's that division because there's, in heavyweight boxing, unlike other sports, it is all you. So at some point, it has to be I. But finding a way to integrate the I into the team thing is a big part of his maturation, isn't it?
It's a very conflicting thing. You know, you imagine you got two men sitting in the square. You know, very masculine, physical, primal, right? And then, but their hands are like in gloves. They couldn't even take their shorts off to use the bathroom they wanted to. They need somebody around them to help them. They can't get water. They got a whole team of people that's going to come in there and make sure and tune them up and get them right and get them all cleaned up for the next round. So as much as it is just him in that ring, he still is as strong as the team that he has around him. And I think that's the kind of the lesson that he learns outside the ring that allows him to really give him that extra gear, you know, that extra level that's able to kind of, you know, take him over the top.
Again, these three movies that you did with Ryan are about this thing that we as people of color see all the time, maybe not directly, but we all know somebody who's lost a father, a man who's lost a father and has to deal with that.
Yep.
And that has to lead to, in some ways, this unhealthy manifestation of pride, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's, I guess, a desensitizing thing that you know, after you keep seeing it, you know, media news all the time, and it's a constant reminder, you know what I'm saying, of the things that keep spinning and keeps happening. So in that sense, you know, being able to, you know, tell these stories that give different perspectives but still give a visceral feeling to question what's going on, if that makes sense, is something that Ryan and I have been lucky enough to keep tapping into, in organic ways, you know what I'm saying, through different projects. So looking forward to the next project that we're doing together. A Wrong Answer around the Atlantic school system and that scandal that kind of happened down in Atlanta on the public school system with the cheating test, standardized test.
Yes, yeah.
So, yeah, that's something that we're looking forward to kind of getting into. Also, Ta-Nehisi Coates is writing along with Ryan. So that's definitely something that that's another, you know, angle. You know what I'm saying? That's another window into, you know, this young black, you know, male, the school teacher, you know, and all the different angles on that, you know. So we've been blessed to connect with some really good projects, man.
Yeah, but it's just, you are really taking advantage of your station, because all these characters you play are aware to some extent of who and what they are, and the blind spots are where the drama comes in, isn't it? I mean, that's where you really have something to play, right?
That's well put. Yeah, that's well put. You know, and the conflicts of, you know, how grounded or how fantastical it is, you know, depending on, you know, that those are the colors that we have to play with. Those are the levels that we get a chance to play in. Like, what's the vehicle? You know, pick the color, pick the model. You know, pick the you know, what's it going to be?
What was your first thought when you got the Creed 2 script when it came to you? What were you thinking?
That was a constant work in progress from like page one, and kind of being along for the ride every step of the way, producing this project. It was a much more hands-on process, so it wasn't like, all right, this is the package, huh? Read it. You know what I'm saying? Like, tell me what you think. It was like a constant growing and molding and critiquing and just tailoring it to kind of get it right with Sly and Jules, who's one of the writers on the script as well, and Steven and myself, and everybody kind of weighed in on their characters a little bit at some point, you know. Tess is very, very smart, and, you know, Steven coming into this family, you know, because it is a family when you're making these movies. He was very thoughtful of asking us what we thought, because we live with these characters, you know what I'm saying, for a long time, and we got a chance to fully flesh them out. So kind of figuring out where we would go, what things we would do, say, you know what I'm saying, in a certain type of way. So we all had a really, you know, good hand on our characters and had some input throughout it. But I was excited about it, you know. It felt like it was a natural progression and the necessary step for Adonis to fully come out of his dad's shadow. I think we made major strides in the first film, but he still had a lot of things that he wasn't fully whole yet. He still had some healing to do. And I think this is the closure healing that he really needs to, like, really be his own man and really take the franchise in that direction and following Adonis and his family and kind of like what's going on with, of course, you know what I'm saying, Rocky being, you know, that and those Rockyisms and what he stands for, you know, in that relationship is good to see also.
It's interesting because it's in this short time, Adonis has become as iconic a figure in that mythology as Rocky and Apollo. So you had to weigh all that in addition to trying to figure out who and what the character is, which sounds like two almost contradictory things in some ways.
Yeah, it's kind of cool to have a character that's, you know, that plays in that world, you know, and is starting to, you know, these characters that's been around for, you know, 40, 50 years,
40 years,
40 years, 40 years is incredible, man. It really is. It's fun to play with that history, and being able to see the effects of having Adonis and Creed movies, you know, with these kids and the generations and hearing the, you know, people talk about how that movie makes them feel, you know, and how they talk about the character and what it means to them to see that. It's a very fulfilling feeling also, you know. It makes me feel like, it's like, all right, cool. I could be that generation's franchise, like, hero fighter, you know what I mean, for them, you know, that's going to, you know, help them feel inspired and motivated and kind of like, you know, overcome obstacles or any hardships they have in their life, to be that escape and something too. That's pretty special.
We'll take a break. My guest who just reminded me how old I am is Michael B. Jordan. He's the star of Creed 2. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? Critics rave The Greatest Hits is a music-infused romance that hits all the right notes and the most original time travel story in years. Featuring music by Nelly Furtado, Beach House, Jamie XX, and more. Watch The Greatest Hits, now streaming on Hulu.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Welcome back to The Treatment. My guest is Michael B. Jordan. But this is also, too, what's great about these characters. So many, and we can even go back to Chronicle, even Friday Night Lights, as you play so many characters who live first and foremost physically, you know, who, we're talking about pride,
yeah,
who take a lot of pride in the way they go through the world in physical terms, you know. Rocky moves very differently from, Adonis moves very different from Montag or from Killmonger. And I just wonder, when you're trying to figure out, address these, how these guys walk through the world, mm-hmm, what do you do? I mean, because Adonis is actually now almost walking on his toes in the beginning of Creed 2. I mean, he's really bouncing.
Yeah.
It's like every encounter is like almost another chance to get into the ring with somebody.
And he's definitely itching for that. I mean, because Adonis's shoes right in that place, that like where he's at in life right now, he's in fighting mode. He's in scrap mode. You know, he's scrapping for validation. You know, honestly.
But you know, in the first film, he comes out almost like shoulders down, like he's looking like a street fight.
Yeah, yeah.
And in this one, he's like he's ready to be in the ring. You know, it's a different kind of fight, but still, like I'm bouncing as I'm sitting here talking to you about it.
No, it's definitely. I think it's the maturity also. I think like in a sense from the first film and the second film, he's still immature in a lot of ways. But I think the things that he's, the experience that he's been through, you know, he's much more, you know, grounded in that sense. So he's going to walk a little bit more confidently. You know, he's world champ, you know what I'm saying, right now. You know, so he's playing to a title. He's playing to a position.
And a perception.
Definitely a perception, and I think that's something that definitely affects him a lot. He's an emotional guy, so I think perception to him definitely means something. You know, Montag is more of an entitlement. You know, like he got police swag. You know, so like, yeah, that was something that I thought about playing. I wasn't sure if I wanted to play that role. I'm in the sense of playing an authoritative figure in that way. You know, when I read the script. Like, I guess in my brain, all I saw was, like, black and brown faces, like all the eels, and like as I read it.
Oh, man.
And I was like, I don't know if I want to do this. I don't know if people would even want to see me, you know, in this light or whatever. And it took a lot of, you know, talking to people I care about, you know, talk to people that whose opinion, you know, that means something. And I slept on it and, you know, prayed on it, you know, and talked to a couple people. And it was...
What finally turned you on?
There was a mixture of it all. And then honestly, talking to Ramin, you know, and talking to him about, you know, talking through with him the universal nature of what this means for everyone, you know, that, yeah, it's at a time and era. This symbolizes, you know, all people, you know, all oppressed people, you know what I'm saying? And,
yeah,
and the powers that be. And it just took some time for me to just to wrap my head around it, you know what I'm saying? And really kind of get it. And I was like, all right, cool, let's do it.
Because so many of the guys you played have been, in their way, anti-authority figures.
It's you know, with Oscar, it's playing a perspective and getting people to feel that I was used to playing. And when I got the opportunity to be on the other side of that, at first when I read it, it was like, I don't know if I want to feel that way while I'm becoming this character. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if I want to feel that way. And that was the thing that I was kind of on the fence about, of like whether I wanted to go into that space.
Because that could be potentially kind of a dehumanizing thing to do.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, how I'm feeling about, you know, what's going on. And just, you know, it's just, it was something that I wasn't, I wasn't quite sure about. But yeah, anyway, I got on board and the other perspective was owning that space and being a part of a bigger picture message, you know, that all films are, you know, as an actor, when you play a role, you're always a part of a bigger narrative, you know, it's solely ever about, you know what I'm saying, one thing. But to be a part of the message of Fahrenheit 451, that book, what that means, it needed to be shown, you know what I'm saying, that get people to start thinking, asking questions, to try to, you know, adapt the book, you know, that's still relevant today, you know what I'm saying? So from such a long time ago that's still relevant today. So just to kind of be in that space and be able to be a cog in that machine, and that helps that thing move, that gets this message out to the people, was something that also really kind of locked me in on making that decision.
I was wondering too, for that, if it felt like kind of a break from so many things you had done before, because you hadn't played an authority figure, and somebody who has that kind of swag that comes from being part of an institution that makes you better than everybody else in some ways.
And it's a very internal film, you know, Montag thinks a lot in that movie, you know,
and doesn't talk a lot for the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, it's very quiet for him, because a lot of the things that he's thinking, he can't say to anybody anyway. So he the only person that he really has to talk to or kind of like work things out is himself and inside his own head. So it was a lot of that.
Well, I guess it's Michael B. Jordan we're talking about, just what he's done so far, which now includes the new film Creed 2. The thing that still you make part of the character here is he's hungry for information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he really wants to know everything. And sometimes like that frustration comes with not being able to get it fast enough or the way he wants to get it. And you also, I thought you found a way to physicalize that. His hands are constantly curling up when he's not getting what he wants, and like he's trying to grab
something.
He's
anxious. He's ready to go. He's always ready to go. I think that comes from just always bouncing around places growing up as a kid.
Sure,
foster home. He's never really been in one place for a really long time until he got adopted by Marianne, you know, and that was kind of his, so he knows what it's like to not fit in places. You know, when he was in foster care, you know what I'm saying, he's getting teased, ragged on, et cetera, you know, things that would always get into fights. And then then he went to the suburbs and, you know, that, you know, fancy schools and, you know, all the good stuff with the luxuries of coming from, you know, the Creed, you know what I'm saying, the Creed legacy, the Creed, you know, the Creed mansion, growing up in the mansion, he didn't quite fit in there either, you know, so he progged the system. So for him, he was always used to just bouncing around and being on guard, you know, for what was going to happen next. And I think he's always kind of he's carried that on to you know, who he is as an adult and the situations that he found himself in, and, you know, being quick to throw the first punch, you know, like being a smaller guy. He was smaller than a lot of people growing up, you know, like Donnie was, me and Ryan kind of talked through of having Adonis, like, you know, when he was younger, just being smaller than everybody, you know, and what that would kind of force on him, character, like as a character and his characteristics, like what that would make him. And he would always throw the first punch, and he's quick to pop off because he got to get his in before the tide shifted. So that's kind of that Tone Trump moment in the first film when he punches at Bianca's show backstage, when he punches Tone Trump. And so anyway, that's that bouncy kind of, I say how I feel in the moment type of that's where that come from.
It's interesting too, because it's his fighting style kind of changes a lot in the second film. I mean, not before the crazy I went to hell Mad Max training, but even before that, he's actually on his feet more than he was in the first film. You know, he's up, like it's weird because I interviewed Mike Tyson once, and I told him I thought he boxed like a middleweight. He said, yeah, I did, partially because I did knock somebody out before my asthma kicked in. But also he said that heavyweights aren't used to people coming at them really fast like that. So you could almost scare somebody if you moved too quick. And it's like Adonis he understands that moving fast throws off the tempo of a heavyweight fight.
Yeah. What we wanted to do was focus on speed for the first one. Because obviously, you know, there has to be something that you learn physically that's going to get you over the hump, you know, of the main fight, you know.
Sure.
So the first one, we really wanted to focus on speed, you know, and show that movement, and that got me what it got me, you know. So the next time around, it was about being able to endure, you know, like how you know, he's going to get off. He's going to get his punches. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to get mine, too. But, like, who,
but
who
the,
can
the,
take...
But we should say the culminating fight, he plants in a way that he doesn't before.
He stands his ground and really delivers and takes punishment. And he endures. He weathers.
But I was aware of what that... I was aware of, like, watching your back and your arms for that last fight. Were you...
Just, my trainer just probably, I just heard him say my quote just went up. My prices just went up. I just heard Corey just in my ear just saying that just now. It's hilarious. I think in cutaways. I do, like, whenever, like, something like that happened, I just think of the cutaway. We really want to physically be intimidating. You know, we wanted to be as close as we could to Florian. Now, Florian's a big guy. He's 6'5", 250. You know, he's a big...
He looks like a building.
Tree trunk, bro. His ankles and... Oh, man, it's crazy. So we wanted it to be close, but not... He dropped 20 pounds. I gained 20 pounds. You know, we wanted that David... We didn't want that David and Goliath feeling, but we still wanted Donnie to feel like that little boy, you know, that kid to that bigger bully. You know what I'm saying? That's what we wanted. We wanted that feeling.
Is what we really see in the first fight. We can really see that fear.
Oh yeah.
Of being the little kid in the yard who has to throw the first punch, whether it registers or not, you still got to throw the first punch. You kind of hope the first punch that you threw it will end
throw
the fight.
You make it count. You know what I'm saying? Make it count. So anyway, so we really focused on, you know, like sit back, you know, just really getting as big as possible and without compromising a boxer's look. You know, we really wanted to stay fluid, and I was only like, I was 197. I think it was 197 pounds. Yeah, that was big for me.
What did it feel like to carry all that weight?
It's a lot of weight. But you know,
it's muscle weight too. So it's a lot dense.
It's like all muscle. So it was one of those things where I really worked on my legs a lot, you know, to make sure that I could like strengthen that to carry it around. But you know,
you're also Evander Holyfield, all torso and a couple of pencils holding you up.
Exactly, and we couldn't have the chicken legs, man. I had to get that together.
Yeah, because as I was saying, just you know, as a boxing fan, I was just aware of the way Adonis was standing in that last fight where he's just there to just show that I'm here, I'm not bouncing around so much anymore. I can stand toe-to-toe to you just by walking that much closer but not throwing a punch, which is what a scared person does. You get that close to somebody, you get scared, you throw a fight, which I don't want to give too much away, but there's a lot of physical psychology in the movie. That's what I'm talking about, the physicality of your performances.
Appreciate it, man. No, it was one of the things that we really wanted to focus on with Steven was the adjustments. You know, making adjustments on the fly, and the coaching element. You know, the coaching element. So you'll see a lot of that, the thinking behind boxing, the game within the game.
What was it like for you seeing the first film with an audience, seeing Creed with an audience?
It was like going to a Vegas fight. It was like going to a Vegas fight. The premiere doesn't count to me because the premiere is like, you know, you're mostly, you know, everybody's there supporting, you know, they love the field. They have some type of involvement, you know what I mean? And they want to succeed. It's a rigged fight. So like you got to go and you got to sneak into a movie theater. That's what you got to do. You got to go in hoodie and sneak in and really get the reactions. And I mean, they're yelling at the screen. They're laughing at parts that, you know, I didn't think, you know, that I didn't personally laugh at, but they're picking up on all the little purposeful nuggets that were laying throughout the film. And once we got to the fights and the way they were just rooting, you know, and the gasp and the, you know, and the, you know, get up, you know, and the yelling, like, you know, they're right there sitting ringside. That's the feeling that you get from the audience it was crazy.
I'm sorry, we're out of time. Please come back and do the show again.
Oh man, I would love to. Would love to, man. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. My guest, who doesn't have Holyfield legs, is Michael B. Jordan. He's the star of Creed 2. Our recording engineer here at NPR West is Patrick Murray. The show is mixed by Kat Yore. It's edited by Blake Veit, who's associate producer. My boxing days are behind me. It's The Treatment. The catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.